what inning do you think we are in the AI game?
I think the first batter of the top of the first inning probably is swinging at the first pitch.
You don't get to just say, I'm going to wait till the fourth quarter till the game is over to place my bets, right? Especially like live betting as that comes out now. Like if the game starts and there's 3.5 point spread and the favorite scores a touchdown or two touchdowns, you don't get the same 3.5 point spread when they've got a 21-point lead in the third quarter. That spread's going to be changing. You said 49% of Americans think the market's down, 55% think the economy's contracting. 1 in 6 Americans apparently think the earth is flat. That doesn't mean it's true.
When I hear stats that 1 in 6 people think the earth is flat, I don't really have any friends. And this makes me want to have even less friends. And I just want to sit in my house and like kind of peek out the window and stare at cars going by and thinking, 1 in 6 you think the earth is flat. Here's the problem. Those people are allowed to reproduce. 77% said Trump was going to win the White House. 23% said Biden's going to win. So what does that mean?
Welcome to the Intelligent Investment Show. I am Garrett Lell. Joining me, as always, Matt Dahl of ARPG in Las Vegas. How's the weather today? You guys still a balmy 59, or did it warm up?
It warmed up. It's actually really, really nice. Last couple of days have been beautiful, but it's supposed to get pretty hot pretty quick. So, you know, I think the days of the 50s and 60s are over for us, that's for sure.
So, Intelligent Investment Show, if this is your first time seeing this, presented by Wealth Partners. That's my new YouTube brand for financial education out there for folks that are just looking to learn a little bit. Matt and I just want to keep you up to date on the stock market, what's going on. Matt's a sharp dude. If you follow back to some of our previous shows, he's made some, he's given some great insights and some pretty, I don't want to call them lucky market calls, but man, everything you say turns out to be pretty, pretty spot on. So, if you're new,
I'd rather be lucky than good, that's for sure.
Hey, absolutely. Any day. So where do you want to start? We talked about this yesterday. Earnings season is just about a wrap at this point, right? 85-90% companies have reported at this point.
Well, 96% of companies have reported, but 99% effectively of market cap has reported. So it's over. Earnings season is over. And, you know, it's been a stellar earnings season. 81% exceeded guidance. Normally that number is around, you know, 65-70%. So it's surprise to surprise, right?
Yeah.
They exceeded by an average of 7%. I'm sorry, 7.5%. Normally that number is in the 5.5-6% range. So we're seeing more companies exceeding their earnings by a greater margin. Okay. And that's what I believe has moved the market.
So NVIDIA is one that we've talked about a lot on the show. And it's today's May 24th. We're recording this just for the record about 12:36 Eastern time on May 24th. They had a huge number yesterday I don't know if it was the sales number was.
So their earnings guidance was $5.60 was consensus estimate was $5.60. Okay. They showed up at six. I think guidance was much lower than I don't even wrote because when they gave guidance in February for this quarter, it was lower than the 560 consensus. So the consensus was the street saying, hey, we know they're going to blow their guidance away. And that's where the $5.60 per share came from. They reported $6.12, right? Earnings, actual earnings. And of course, you know, the market loved that. What they call the whisper number was the number that they thought they were going to report on sales for this quarter, right? And consensus was $24.6 billion in sales for last quarter. And they thought it was actually going to be closer to $26 billion. Came in at $26.06. Then they provided guidance on their call of $28 billion for next quarter. An 8% pop over the surprise number we got this quarter. So it's just the earnings just keep exploding. The guidance keeps growing. So the multiple is really staying in check, which is keeping the stock cheap, if you look at future earnings. I'm not talking about the price of the stock being cheap, but the price that you're paying for future earnings is actually pretty cheap. If they continue to grow at this rate, you're buying those earnings 3 years down the road at 10 times earnings. Okay? That's tremendous. That's Toyota. That's Toyota. I mean, you're buying it 30 times earnings out, but the company's just, the earnings are absolutely exploding. So you're buying it at such a discount going forward. You're not, although it's getting a lot of hype, it's not all, it's not what people think it is. NVIDIA trading at 30 times earnings, sells a $100,000 chip. Okay. Oracle at the peak of the dot bomb craze in 2000, 2001, right? Oracle traded at 104 times earnings and they sold $150, whatever. Okay. So you're talking, NVIDIA is growing at a much faster rate than Oracle and Cisco did back then. Okay. I'm sorry, it was Cisco that ran 104 times earnings. NVIDIA is growing at a much faster clip than Cisco was then. Okay. And they're more consistent. Okay. So there's a lot of room to run with NVIDIA. I don't think it's anywhere near. In fact, I told my advisors about a month ago that I thought NVIDIA was going to go to about 3,000 eventually and then do a 30 for one split back to 100. And here it is. Now it's basically 1,000, 1,050. And now they announced a 10 for one split. Okay. Now the 10 for one split, as it relates, people think that's a big magic thing that happens. Oh, the stock splits. Well, if you have a $100 stock and you do a 10 for one split, you have a $100 stock and you own 10 shares of $100, that's $1,000, right? And it does a 10 for one split. Well, now you own 100 shares at $10. Okay. It's the same thing. However, it makes it more accessible to lots of people who don't do fractional shares. The other thing is when you put it into portfolios at percentiles, the systems can buy more shares because they're more granular, right? It's like if it's a 7% position of portfolio, the computer might only be able to take it to 5.5% because the next to purchase the next share of $1,050 might take that portfolio to 7.2%. So thus it won't buy that last share. Versus if it's $100 a share, it'll get it all the way up to 6.9%. So it'll actually buy more. So, that's kind of why they do it that way. I think it will create a little bit of a pop. Typically, we see that's about a 7% pop, right? It doesn't mean the company's going to perform any better, but you will see sort of a and that pop also is inclusive of the announcement, by the way, which it's hard to it's really hard to delineate how much of the pop that was received yesterday, and this when the stock went up 9.2%, how much of that was the split? How much of that was the earnings? I would say it's probably 80% earnings and sales guidance. Probably 20% is the split. So, but who knows? That could go either way. So.
So real quick, I know NVIDIA is one. That's something we've talked about a lot. I know it's still your top holding.
Yeah.
Okay. Just share a little bit of back. What exactly is NVIDIA doing? I know AI. I know that they're making the chips, but just in a minute or two, just kind of a your elevator, not pitch, because in case if this is the first time you're here, this is not an investment advice show. This is financial education and information only. We'll get to that in the disclosures later, but. Just kind of paint the story of how does NVIDIA make money and why are they making so much of it?
Well, NVIDIA is a chip maker, and their chips, most of their chips, or the chips they're releasing now, and a lot of their research that they're going to be putting into computers. Your HP, I'm looking at my computer right now. It's an HP and has a big NVIDIA sticker on it. Okay, now this computer's from 2021, so it's not AI, but
Right.
they are the forefront AI chip manufacturer. They own 80% of the AI chip market share, 80%. And they have a war chest that's massive. Google, not to change subject here, Google had about the same market share in 2000 as far as search goes. Actually, it wasn't, I think it was like 60%. It was Google, Yahoo, Google, Yahoo. But Google was better. Google had the bigger war chest. Google was smarter. Now Google owns 94% of search. So I think NVIDIA, there's other companies, AMD, Micron will they will get involved. All other companies will get involved. However, NVIDIA is the Google of AI chip manufacturing, and it's going to be the premier, the preeminent brand that computer companies are going to want inside their computers. Probably ex Apple, because I believe Apple will probably have its own chip at some point. Okay. But as far as the non-Apple operating system computers, your HPs, your Dells, those companies, they're all going to want to have NVIDIA chips because it what you can make those you can sell those computers for more money if it has an NVIDIA chip. It's kind of like if you take a Mustang and you put a Shelby badge on it, well, you know that Mustang's got a Shelby engine in it and Shelby parts in it. So it's does it really cost that much more to build? Not really, but you know it's the internals of that car are better, they're different. So they charge 30% more. So the computer companies that use NVIDIA chips, they use AI chips, they're going to want to use NVIDIA over one of the other brands because they're going to receive a higher, they're going to get a higher price for it, they're going to get a higher gross margin of above and beyond the chip. And I think that's just going to expand. And the higher sales, the higher earnings, the bigger the war chest, the more money they have for research, the better the chips are going to be. They just have more horsepower to do the work to make their product better. And I think this is in its infancy. I really do. I think this is going to go for years and years and years.
And if in its infancy, specifically to NVIDIA, you're just talking about the AI, because I was actually going to ask that question briefly, is what inning do you think we are in the AI game?
I think the first batter of the top of the first inning probably is swinging at the first pitch.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. So shifting gears off of that, I know the other kind of hot topic between you and I the last couple of shows has been this tug of war between the AI. Is it over sensationalizing it to call it the AI revolution? Is that too big of a word?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No, I think AI is going to be very, very big. I think it's not going to be as big as some people think it's going to be. Okay. I don't know that it's going to be as big as and impactful as necessarily the media says it's going to be, but I think it will impact every part of everyone's life in some way, large, some to a large extent, some to a small extent. I think a lot of analyst jobs will be converted to AI. I think there will be a lot of sort of the analytical jobs will go to AI, and I think it's going to impact a lot of people. And I think it will also bring a I think it will cause efficiencies in companies that will cause them to have more money at the bottom line to then expand their company to employ those people doing other things. So I don't know. I don't think this is going to be a I don't think it's going to be harmful for people's economics, but it might cause them a transition in their professional life to some extent.
So interest rates, we keep a pretty close eye on those. I'm looking at it right now. We're pretty much spot on where we were 2 weeks ago when we chatted. We're at 4.47 right now on the 10-year. It was 4.50 2 weeks ago when we chatted on the 10th. I know we just had FOMC meeting come out. So talk to me about what's going on that side of the tug of war rope.
So FOMC, the minutes came out, FOMC, and there was a line in there that spoke specifically to the members of the FOMC presidents, voting members, are willing to tighten monetary policy further if inflation doesn't come down based on the data that they received from the first quarter. Okay. And that caused like almost an instantaneous 10 basis point spike because in the 2 week interim since we've last spoken, the 10-year got down to 434. Okay. Now it went to 450. Now I think we're looking at it today. I'm looking at it's 446, 447. Okay.
Which is
And
interesting
so the
too, because that's
FOMC.
right at that's a that's an interesting technical level that we talked about. That was
Sorry about that.
No, you're good. I've kind of learned I like to save some of those outtakes. Those outtakes can go off, can be a nice little add-on at the end. So those can be fun.
Right.
Which that was interesting though, because the 435, that was the technical ceiling for, you know, back in October. We talked about it in November. And So it, a lot of times is, you know, we don't talk about this necessarily on the show, but a lot, your previous ceilings become your next floor a lot of times. And that's what held right here at 435.
Yeah, it held. And then it held there waiting for the next data point, the next catalyst. And the next catalyst was the we had FOMC minutes. We had jobless claims come in pretty good, pretty tight. We had PMI come in pretty warm. The purchasing manager index composite came in, and we're seeing higher input costs, specifically on the commodity side, right? Copper is expensive, you know, fuel oil is expensive. So that caused yields to spike a little bit, you know, and if you notice, the market sort of kind of stalled out at this, around this 5,300 mark there. So, you know, if you look at, and then that gets us into okay, so the FOMC member said they're willing to, they're willing to raise rates if inflation doesn't come down, right? They're willing to tighten monetary policy further than where we're at. Okay, well, what does that mean, right? Where is CPI? What makes up CPI? How did we get to where we got, right? So year over year, core CPI is 3.61. Okay, there it is. Well, X shelter, X auto insurance, it's 0.9. It's 0.9 if you take those two components away. That's it, okay? Now, the pre-pandemic average was those two components was 1.4, okay? So there's shelter, which is a lagging thing, which is it's a lagging metric with monetary policy. As monetary policy tightens up, it takes a while for that to really hit shelter, owner equivalent rent, housing prices, all of those things. Now, that doesn't mean those prices are going to go down. It just means they're going to stop going up at such a fast rate. Auto insurance, that was an anomaly specific to the pandemic. With all those factories shut down and all those vendors for the car manufacturers, people that make all the auto parts, the bearings, the radios, the chips, the lights, the dash, all the pieces that go into making a car, all of those factories shut down, right?
That was an anomaly, but that was one of the coolest, no way in the world this should ever happen events of my lifetime, because that was 2021, I believe. In 2021, my 2016 4Runner outperform the S&P 500. That should not happen.
Right.
My car went up like 24% in value that year. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Well, then you get into simple supply and demand, right?
Right.
There was no supply of cars, of new cars, for a long, long time. Yeah. So the only available cars to sell were used cars.
Right.
So the price of used cars just exploded. So the cost to insure a used car has absolutely just, you know, gone up by, you know, 30-40% in the last 2 years. And that's what's happening now. So that number is going to, as far as that rate of change calculation, that's going to change in a big fat hurry soon. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think you'll see CPI really start to come, core CPI come down, core PCE really start to come down. I think absolutely. It's not out of the realm of possibility that core PCE will be in the very, very, very low twos by the end of this year. And I'm sticking to my 2 to 3 rate cuts this year. We're going to stick to our numbers. In the last week, due to the FOMC minutes, due to the good jobless claims, due to the PMI numbers that have come in, rate cuts, they were down to about 1 about a month ago for the year. They went all the way back up to 2.2 a week ago. Now they're back down to 1.4. So, you know, again, it's always the moving targets, right? So we still think we're going to get at least 2, but maybe 3 if we start to see some of this cooling. And we're starting to see some of that cooling in the consumer, right? We're starting to see some pressure at the lower end of the consumer. So I think there's going to be a cooling off in the economy. And I think the Fed's aware of those things. And I think they're going to want to make sure what maybe kind of a glowing amber doesn't turn into a campfire which turns into a forest fire. And I think they're going to want to keep that this thing under control.
So, a cool part of our pre-production call yesterday, you know, we've spent the tug of war, those two things, AI versus interest rates, that's kind of dominated our conversations lately. But you were talking yesterday about some other sectors and other opportunities that you're starting to see that you're just, I don't know, did I understand you correctly? Are you starting to actively make some purchases and shift some things around a little bit? Or are these just some sectors maybe that you're starting to look ahead, you know, down the road and maybe interesting in the third quarter?
In our income portfolio, we've added a healthcare REIT to it. We really like healthcare. We think healthcare earnings are going to come back strong. They suffered a real bad year last year because everyone spent, healthcare did great in 2020, 2021, and then 2020, 2022 was basically, normal as far as growth or, but then 2023 there was a 25% reduction in earnings in healthcare. So healthcare and health and real estate, and there's a lot of healthcare real estate trusts out there, big medical complexes. So a lot of those units have been vacant or have had to renegotiate their lease at lower prices because they're just not as busy as they were, and cash flows haven't been there. And interest rates have gone up. So the prices of commercial real estate has really suffered. So sort of healthcare and REITs have suffered together, and healthcare REITs specifically have done really poorly, but they have great cash flows. So in our high income portfolio, we bought some we bought a healthcare REIT. It has a nice 8.3% dividend, and we think that's a great place to be in a falling interest rate environment with healthcare earnings expected to grow by about 24% over the next year to kind of recover that loss. So we think that's a good place to be. Those are opportunities, and this is you have to be able to kind of look where the puck is going or where everyone's not looking because NVIDIA has taken all the earn between NVIDIA and inflation slash earning or slash yields and interest rates, that's taken all of the air out of the room. So you have to not that the REIT isn't sort of a play on interest rates and earnings, it is, but no one's looking there. And this is perception reality and the reality is you it's hard to buy those things when they're not popular. But over time it usually pans out to be really, really well. And one thing I did want to touch on, and I don't mean to take over the moderator position here, but one thing I did want to touch on was
Hey, we can. If I can interject my investment commentary, you can certainly interject your moderation skills. That's fine.
my skills, let's just call it a moderation skill with one L. There's been this massive, I think, disparity between perception and reality, more so this year than I've seen in a long time. And I saw a Harris poll today. It's a Harris poll. And we'll talk about another poll. It was a presidential poll and how that's going to affect the S&P. So I think people are interested. And we're getting to that point where we need to talk about it and give some people some guidance on how it's going to impact the markets. The Harris poll that came out today, 55% of Americans believe the economy is shrinking. There is no data anywhere that supports a shrinking economy. Last quarter, the economy slowed its growth from 3.4 in Q4 of 2023 to 1.6 in Q1 of 2024. However, if you remove trade from that calculation, it grew by 3.1%. So it was very, very strong. Okay. 49% of Americans believe the S&P 500 is down year to date. This poll is from Wednesday. S&P was up 11.5%.
49% of Americans
Half
think
of the
the
country
S&P
believe
500
the
is
S&P is
down year to date.
down for the year when it's up 11.5%. Okay. 49% of Americans believe that unemployment is at a 50-year high. It's at a 50-year low. Okay. So we have this massive disparity between what people think and what is the truth. And this is where, going into election season, we're going to see how the candidates and the parties leverage these perceptions for their own benefit. And it's important that our job is to make sure that folks are educated and understand what the actual truth is so that they can make a more of an informed decision, right? So Fundstrat did a poll across all of their clients, right? And Fundstrat's their data mining group for the for the markets. They do a great job. And there was a very simple question: who will win the White House in 2024? That was the only question. There was two choices: Trump and Biden, and that was it. Okay. And they cut it between two groups: the institutional side, which is your massive banks and companies that are their clients, and then the more of the retail side, people that subscribe to their channels and things like that. And it was almost identical, but there was some disparity. The institutional side, who knows all the real numbers, okay, 77% said Trump was going to win the White House. 23% said Biden was going to win. The other side, the people side, it was 73% said Trump was going to win the White House. 27% said Biden was going to win. So it's close, but there is a small disparity there. So what does that mean? I think that means we need to look at the probability that Trump will win the White House. Okay. So will that impact the markets? Normally it wouldn't. I'm not a political guy. I think the market looks through who's ever in the White House, who's ever in Congress. These companies know how to make money, no matter who's in charge. We've said that 100 times. However, there is a pretty big disparity between these two candidates and their approach to economics, specifically as it relates to taxes and regulation. Taxes, Biden's proposal of raising the corporate tax rate from 21%, which Trump brought down to 21%, to raise it back to 28%. That's a 7% increase in corporate taxes, which relates to about $13 a share, $14 a share on earnings of S&P. So if we think S&P is going to make $245, $246 a share in 2024, and 200, call it $273 a share, 2025, and that proposal is implemented in 2025, retro back to the beginning of the year. Now we've gone from 273, 274 down to 260. Okay. That's going to impact the market. That's going to impact the prices of the market. It really, really will. So, obviously there's sort of the qualitative 800-pound gorilla that is Donald Trump and how he approaches business regulation and general economics. Everyone, I think, would agree that he's very pro-business, and there will be that put into the economy, into the markets too. And I think the market has priced in for a long, long time the potential of the Biden tax increase. And I think after the conventions, after Labor Day, the polls are really going to get serious, and the market might begin to price in maybe those tax increases not coming to fruition. Okay. And I don't think the market, specifically the bond market, is going to get caught off sides this time like it was in 2016. I don't think anyone thought Trump was going to win in 2016. I don't. Okay. Not even Trump, honestly. So we talked about this yesterday in our meeting, that the overnight futures had absolutely crashed when Trump was winning overnight, because they thought he was going to, create World War III and all these other things. But then by the time the market opened, they had come all the way back. And then over the course of the next few weeks, the market just exploded and the bond market imploded. Everyone sold off their bonds because the bond market thought, oh, wow, this guy's going to really grow GDP, and interest rates are going to have to go up. So I don't want to be holding these low yield instruments any longer. I'm going to sell these off as quick as I can, because I don't want to be stuck holding these things. I want to be where the money is, I want to buy these bonds a year out when interest rates are much, much higher because the economy is growing so much better. So I don't think the market's going to get caught off sides, both on the equity and the fixed income side, like it was last time. I think the market is going to really start to price in a probable Trump win if the data and the polling stays the same as it is now. If it stays the same and the direction, the trend stays the same, I think you'll start to see those things really start to be priced into the market, both on the fixed income and I think you'll see probably interest rates will probably be a little stickier than we would like, I think equity prices will start to will actually expand. And 3.5 to 4.5%, I'm sorry, kind of the 3.5 to 5% on the 10-year is when the S&P multiple is at its highest. It lives over 20 times, lives over a 20 multiple in that range of the 10-year, which is where we're at now.
For your first job, interjecting as a moderator, you did a pretty good job there, man. I mean, that was well done. I'm getting kudos there to you. We
Just a
talked
win
about
back.
this yesterday, and I just thought of a really obvious analogy to button this up a little bit with what you're talking about, perception and reality and pricing in the markets. I don't remember which election it was, but I do remember one election in particular. It was either 2016 or 2020 that I felt like I was getting a lot of clients. Every client that I talked to said they wanted to wait till after the election to do anything, like whether that was invest money in the market or if I suggested a change. I said, well, let's wait till after the election and then we'll. And the flaw in that way of thinking is that it's not like the election is a surprise. Everybody sees it coming. And the analogy here is, I mean, you're in Vegas. You guys are known to do a little bit of wagering in that city. You don't get to just say, I'm going to wait till the fourth quarter or till the game is over to place my bets, right? Especially like live betting as that comes out now. Like if a game starts and a team's got a 3.5 point, there's a 3.5 point spread and the favorite scores a touchdown or two touchdowns, you don't get the same 3.5 point spread when they've got a 21 point lead in the third quarter. That spread's going to be changing. As we get closer and closer to the election and reality of the future becomes a little bit more clear, the effects and the consequences and the domino effects of that reality start to be adjusted in the stock market in and of itself. And I want to say something on this too. This is like an economic lesson wrapped up in a little bit of a joke here, I guess. But I saw something the other day. You said 49% of Americans think the market's down, 55% think the economy's contracting. One in six Americans apparently think the earth is flat. That doesn't mean it's true. Right? Just because somebody thinks something doesn't mean it's true. And the data is going to be what drives the engine forward, not the perception. But perception in the markets
When I
can
hear
affect
stats
it.
like when I hear stats that one in six people think the earth is flat, I don't really have any friends. And this makes me want to have even less friends. And I just want to sit in my house and like kind of peek out the window and stare at cars going by and thinking, God, one in six of you think the earth is flat. And here's the problem. Those people are allowed to reproduce.
They're allowed to vote. They're allowed to do a lot of things that I think are concerning. I'll tell you
Like, you
something
think
even
the earth is
scarier than
flat?
that.
Okay, it's time for your vasectomy or it's time for debt, whatever.
There
You
you go.
can't, you're too stupid to make people.
One of the scariest flat Earth experiences that I had. So when I first time I'd ever heard of this whole flat Earth thing, I was on a late night YouTube binge, and I see something about flat Earth, and I click it, and there was a video taking place at the like worldwide flat Earth convention. And I found out in that video that the worldwide flat Earth convention is like 20 minutes from where I live. These people are among us. Like they're in my backyard. I was like, oh no, I bet I know some of them. Anyway, I digress big time, but
I mean, listen. We don't want to offend people with their beliefs, right? But they're stupid. And I don't care if they're offended because they're dumb.
I don't mean to project any type of a hate towards the people. I'm just simply acknowledging that their facts, they're not facts. They're incorrect. I don't understand.
I mean,
Anyway.
what do you say to that? What do you say? I mean, honestly, give them a juice box and a thing of crackers and let them play in the sand with the other children.
That's exactly
I
right.
mean,
Yeah.
so,
So
but
you're in
to your
targets.
point,
Yeah.
to your point of waiting till the fourth quarter to make the bets, right?
Yeah.
Now, you're right. And there are clients, oh, we should wait, we should wait, we should wait. Well, by the time you wait, by the time the dust has settled, the easy money, the money's been made. Right. And this is where pros versus Joes, right? The pros, we know the market is moving in the direction where the world is likely going to be in 9 months from now, not where it is. Okay. And if you wait to for the world to get where it's going to be before you allocate resources there, you might as well just stay home because at that point, all the it's already been allocated, and the money will likely be outflowing from there, right? So you know, it's that's what we're here to do, is to make sure we're like Wayne Gretzky said, we're skating to where the puck is going, not to where it is,
Yeah.
right? And you know, what's funny is this little pop in yields and that little problem we had in April. People think that, and again, perception and reality, right? People think the market's overpriced. It's not. It's not. It's not overpriced at all. And you can see it. People are de-risking. Margin debt is a great tool to look at general risk. It was just off the charts in 2021, and it just pummeled in 2022 and 2023. Okay, obviously in 2020, and then it spiked back up in 2020. So it's interesting to watch. Margin debt for the first time in a year decreased over the last 3 or 4 weeks. The last month or so is the, if you take the monthly rolling calendar, I just saw this today, it's the fourth largest monthly outflows of equities in 20 years. So people are de-risking, okay, in the face of growing earnings, in the face of interest rates likely going down, because I think people, my guess is people think that inflation is stickier than it is, because they've just seen these headline numbers and people don't do the work underneath the numbers. They don't lift the hood to find out what's really causing the numbers to take place, and how and what could then move the number the other way. And that's what we're here for, right? And that's why we're seeing de-risking, because although the Jay Powell did say there, because we had 3 hot months in a row. Obviously, one quarter where inflation data was a little hotter than they would have liked to. And they are taking signal from that. And he did say, we are taking signal from this. 1 month we won't, 2 months we won't, but 3 months in a row, that's a quarter. We're going to take signal from that, which is why they changed to rate cuts. Rate cuts are definitely coming, to, you know, we're going to just wait a minute here. Okay. And that's, you know, when we entered the year, I want to say the market had 6, 7 rate cuts priced in. Now it's down to 1.4. But a week ago it was 2.2. Next time we do the show, it will probably be back over 2. Okay. So, you know, it's back to perception and reality. Who's taking their money out of the market? I wouldn't take my money out of this market. Okay. If we're looking at, you know, 9% earnings growth this year and probably 12% next year, a potential pro-business president, corporate tax cuts being made permanent. Those are good. Those are good. I think there's a pretty decent mix here for the market to do really, really well for the remainder of this year and into 2025. So, but the perception is that inflation is running amok again, and people are de-risking because they don't want to get caught offsides like they were in 2022, right? But it's a fundamentally different story. You just have to lift the hood and check the oil.
So yesterday when we were talking, this we'll probably wrap it up on this. I thought this was an interesting point that you made, or just a comment you made yesterday. You said that, because I mean, honestly, I'll buy into the hype a little bit and say, like, listening to the story that you tell and the economic picture that you paint. I mean, it sounds like we're just in this roaring time of prosperity. And despite all that, you said that, you know, a lot of analysts right now are raising their year-end targets, and you're not. You said that you're holding right there at 5350, which is basically where we're at. I mean, that we're a percent light of that right now. And I thought that was interesting, and I kind of commented to you yesterday that it's, you know, I think it's a testament to you and your convictions to not adjust that. I think a lot of times when, if you are paying attention to the data, you kind of got two battling camps. You got some people who are pessimistic because they don't know the data. And then some professionals who do see the data, they're getting overzealous and maybe raising their targets a little bit and getting a little bit ahead of it. You're staying right where you're at. Now, to be fair, you were probably, is it fair to say you were more bullish at the beginning of the year than maybe the averages? So the average professional may have to be raising their expectations or their targets where you were already maybe up there. But despite all this, you're kind of saying, like, right now, year end 5350.
But that's based on a very simple calculation of the current data set and the current environment that we have now. That could change. Okay. So yes, I'm sticking to 5350, but there's a catalyst, there's a big catalyst that could change, and that's obviously the election. All right. So 5350 is our base case, sort of 5,000 is our bear case, and 5600 is our bull case. Okay. Now, there is an outlier catalyst that's not much of an outlier anymore. It's actually a probability that I think the market could see a 7-8% pop above and beyond our number, purely on a forward-looking estimate of what the economy would do if Trump gets elected. Okay. And I think, and this goes back to the 2020 election, I received a lot of communications from lots of clients, wanting to make sure, hey, are we, when the election was happening, and they weren't sure. I remember receiving a communication from a client on election night when Trump was way ahead and they all thought he was going to win. It was before the votes came in later that where Biden won. And he was like, are we all in? I want to make sure we're all in. He wanted to make sure he was all into the market because Trump was winning. And that's just how people think. Right, wrong, or otherwise, that's how people think. Whether they're Democrats or Republicans, if Trump wins, they're going to want to be all in. Okay. They're going to want to make their money. So that could create a sort of a pop, kind of an initial, 3 to 4, 5% pop that could then generate a FOMO, which momentum that could take the market another few percentile above that. And we could see 57, 5,800 into this year if with something like that. That is possible. But that's so my bull case, the 5,600 range, right? That's, I think, is likely if Trump gets elected. If Biden gets elected, it's probably going to be 5,350. Now, I don't mean to say that Biden is not better for the economy than Trump. I'm not saying that at all. But there's an energy that Donald Trump has as it relates to the stock market, as it relates to the economy. Now, over the course of the next 4 years, I think the market will probably perform similar with the two of them, probably a little bit better with Trump, maybe 2 or 3% a year. Not all that much different, though. Okay. But it'll be that initial pop that takes us into the end of this year that would cause a change in that calculation. But anything can happen between now and then. So, and we've got what, 6 months to the election. So there's 5.5 months or whatever. So there's a lot of things that can change between now and then. And but other than that, but if earnings stay where they are, interest rates go in the direction we think they're going to go, the current administration stays in place, then I think the 5,350 is a pretty fair number. But again, if Trump gets in, obviously now the market has to price in those corporate tax cuts being made permanent, which they probably weren't calculating before. So.
Well, we will continue to chat about that as it gets a little bit closer. We talked about it yesterday. I don't love talking about politics. I'm not a particularly political person. I know you're not either. But it does affect the market, so we got to talk about it some. But it's interesting to see how that shakes out. Well, as always, thank you, my friend. If you didn't catch that earlier, the Intelligent Investment Show is for informational and education purposes only. Neither Matt nor I know anything about your financial situation, so we have absolutely no idea if you should buy treasuries, buy NVIDIA, sell this, sell that. We do not know. This is education and information only. However, if you do need to seek professional investment advice, I know a guy in Las Vegas, and he's pretty sharp. He's got a really cool car behind him there. So, Matt, why don't you tell everybody where they can meet you or where they can reach you? I'll also put all that stuff in the description. Wherever you're watching this at, you're not that far away from Matt's phone number and a link that you can click to get to him. But Matt, go ahead and tell them if they want to write it down themselves.
We can be reached through our website at intelligentinvestment.com. You can contact us through there. Or you can call the office here directly, 702-655-8300. If you are a flat earther, please don't call. Please seek professional
You're gonna have that on your
help.
client intake next time. Like, do you believe in flat earth?
If they, yeah, absolutely, but you're out. You're out.
Make it a
Like, I have
pictograph.
$20 million. Don't care. I'd be like, actually, that's fine. Actually, they're like, I have two, I have 3 billion. The earth is flat. The earth is flat. You're right. Who knew?
You're a capitalist above all else, my friend. And also,
I gotta tell you, yeah. I mean, are you kidding me? Somebody walks in here with, $3 or $4 billion or something they want to invest with us, and they say I'm a flat earther. I'm coming in here the next day wearing like a hula hoop shaped like a flat earth.
Well, my
And like,
economic.
I'll have Christopher Columbus and Magellan on a dartboard. So, yeah, they were wrong.
Well, fortunately, my economic interest in this endeavor doesn't require my actual one-on-one interaction with mine. So I don't care if you are a flat earther. Like and subscribe to this video. Like the video. Subscribe to Wealth Partners. Go to YouTube. If you're on YouTube, you can just click the link. But if you're watching on the website, go to YouTube/@WealthPartners. Subscribe. I don't care if you believe we didn't. If we faked the moon landing and the Earth's flat and everything, I don't care. You can subscribe all day to me. But always a good time, man. See you in a couple of weeks. But always appreciate you taking the time to chat with us and share some of that great wisdom of yours.
All right, my friend.
All
Talk
right.
soon.
Take it easy.